Today's Last Comic Standing recap is sponsored in part by LegalZoom, because there's lots of great reasons that smart business people trust LegalZoom. For starters, if you want to incorporate, form an LLC, a nonprofit, file a patent or a trademark, get a DBA and more, LegalZoom provides you all the help that you need, because over the past decade, more than a million business owners, just like you, have started with LegalZoom. Now, sure, you could just go through and read all these books about legal stuff or books about meditation, but why would you want to when you can get the help from LegalZoom? It should be your first stop when you need advice from an attorney. Now, LegalZoom's not a law firm, so they built a network of independent attorneys in most states to provide legal advice and other useful services to help you run your business. So if it's a contract that you need reviewed or advice on incorporating or forming an LLC, whatever your legal question, start with LegalZoom, because they provide complete transparency, upfront pricing, customer reviews, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So make the smart choice for your business at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter ROB at checkout to save even more. Again, that's Rob at checkout for more savings at LegalZoom. Legal help is here. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who's less funny than Tom Arnold, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Last Comic Standing recap, episode 6 of 2015. Here to talk about round 2 of the semifinals. Here with me is our co-host for the Last Comic Standing recap. Give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom.
Do not sell yourself short, Rob. You are much funnier than Tom Arnold, right, in my opinion.
But am I funnier than Roseanne's first husband?
I don't know who that man is, so I'm going to... This is going to be a TBD answer.
Probably not.
I mean, if he hasn't made a name for himself, then I'm assuming he's not as funny as you.
Mike, we've got a lot to talk through here today as 5 more comics move into the round of 10.
Yeah, and we're not exactly going to call them the challenge rounds anymore, right? Apparently.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's going on next week on Last Comic Standing. That's going to be something that we'll definitely touch on. I don't know what's happening next week, and I don't know if the finale is in 2 weeks.
Honestly, it might be. We might have a substantially shorter season than we first predicted.
We really have no idea what's going on in this show. And Last Comic Standing has, in 2 seasons of covering this, they don't give a damn if we know what's going on or not.
No, they are basically blindfolding their audience and revealing peaks of the environment, like one little glimpse at a time. But they're not ever telling you where we're going.
Yes, it's so mysterious. Oh, we're on the edge of our seat the whole ride.
Yeah, this is a television mystery show all on its own.
We have no idea. And it seems like the part of the show that we really like, where we do these activities, seems like that may have gotten cut out.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's definitely something that we both have said it really excites us the most as like big reality TV fans. I would argue that that's probably the driving force that made us both want to show interest in recapping this last year. And I would say this is probably the most radical change that the show has made. There was only one other season where they didn't do any challenges whatsoever, and that was the 3rd season, which I don't know if you remember, Rob. It was just they took the comic from the 1st season versus the comic from the 2nd season, and they just performed every week, and America voted on who they liked and who should get sent home.
Of course I remember.
So that's the Hansian version of Last Comic Standing. Yeah. But this is a huge shift in the format, and I wonder if it's... Maybe it was NBC saying, like, okay, you guys can come back, but you're going to have a substantially reduced episode order, in which case they had to say, okay, something has to go, and that'll be the challenges.
Well, I wonder if it was a substantially reduced episode order or a substantially reduced budget, because I feel like all those other locations are going to be what gets expensive, where this seems like this is all shot in the course of maybe like a couple of weeks.
I mean, I have to think, though. I'm not good with monetary figures whatsoever, but the other thing last year, I mean, their challenges were at what? They were performing at like UCB, they were hitting like major comedy clubs. It doesn't cost too much to rent them out for like 3 nights, and then all the rest of the stuff took place on Universal Studios, which is all about, you know, corporate synergy. So I don't know how much the challenges contributed to the budget, but you could be right. If they took a significant slash, they thought, well, let's not, you know, put our efforts behind creating all these challenges, let's just focus on making really, really good performances.
Well, not to get too far down the rabbit hole away from Last Comic Standing's episode from this week, but I do think that the production days would have been increased to do more and more stuff. And I also feel like all those nights at different venues where it's like, okay, tonight they're at the Laugh Factory, tonight they're at the Hollywood Improv, tonight they're at this place, tonight they're at this place. If you sort of just keep it all contained to a couple of locations in a couple of days, that's going to be a substantially lower budget in terms of cost, as opposed to going to all these other locations and renting out these other clubs on these other nights and stuff like that. I think it's just the production days that ends up being the most expensive thing.
Do you think Norm Macdonald and Anthony Jeselnik's going rates were so high that it almost bankrupted the Last Comic Standing production team and they had to cut the challenge rounds?
No, I don't think so, but I wonder if maybe J.B. Smoove and Russell Peters' rates were.
J.B. Smoove had to pay them to be on.
No, J.B. Smoove is great. He wasn't that great as the host of Last Comic Standing, but you know, it seemed like he wanted to come back, but I think it was just maybe a monetary decision.
Nobody, Anthony Jeselnik, I would argue, is probably the best host that we've seen thus far. Let's look at the, I mean, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but we have like Jay Moore, Anthony Clark of Yes Dear fame, who else? Bill Bellamy and Craig Robinson. Like, none of these guys are really that good. Jeselnik was at least able to take the concept and say, okay, I'm going to put my own spin on it.
Yeah, Jeselnik has been good. He has been very strong this season.
Yeah, and he even got a little bit of like one highlight here in these top three punchline moments of the season thus far.
Yeah, I didn't even understand what that countdown was this week.
I don't know why it was three and not five.
Well, I don't even know why it was three and not one. I didn't even get what the joke was on two of them.
Two of them were, I guess, focused on Anthony, but then the last one was really the best one, the Norm joke about the troops. And one would argue that might be one of the funniest jokes of the night, but it's just odd that, like, if you're going to pad out the bits, pad them out or significantly reduce them. Don't just throw in the middle of the show. And now, three moments that you didn't see, but we're going to show because they were pretty funny and we need to pad it somehow.
Yeah, very weird. Okay. Let's talk about this. Five people ultimately move on in this show. Those are Ian Bagg, Joe List, Dominique, Michael Palasek, and Ryan Connor. I thought there were some odd choices where last week I really agreed with just about everything that they did on the show. I felt like this week there were some stranger picks, and I look forward to going through all the comics with you tonight, Mike.
I absolutely agree. I think I said last week that the only one I really disagreed on was Andy Erickson, but there were a couple that were a little questionable here, a couple people that I thought really should have made it through. Overall, I will say, and I don't want to frown upon this episode too much and put the cart before the horse, I do feel like this group was probably a little bit lower in quality from the previous group. You know, there were some people that I was, even the ones that, some people that made it through, I thought like, well, you were the strongest of the night, but that's not saying much.
Yeah, I agree though. I do think it was somewhat lopsided in terms of the better people were on the first semifinal night, especially the people that ended up getting through. And I wouldn't be surprised to know that the winner came from the first group of five as opposed to the second group of five.
There's one dark horse here in the second group of five that I may want to point out for a different reason than actually the comedy that he does, but yeah, I agree with you. And I wonder if, I don't want to speculate too much on the head-to-head rounds next week, but I wonder if they're going to match up someone from group one with someone from group two. And if that's the case, we might see a group two massacre.
A throwback to Last Comic Standing season three.
Yeah, exactly, which is essentially the same thing.
So Wanda Sykes is back again this week to be the mentor. I wish that they would sort of just label her as the executive producer, Wanda Sykes, as opposed to just some random comic that just happened to be showing up here. Like she's just like a guest star.
Yeah, they did it last year a little bit. Maybe it's because they had to introduce this revamped format. But I mean, she's even producing the sitcom that Rodman's doing. So it's very clear her name is attached to this show, even if they don't blatantly mention it.
Yeah, it would be sort of like if on The Bachelor, they would be like, we brought in somebody to help coach the women. His name is Mike Fleiss, and he just happens to be here, and he's here to talk about what the women should be doing to meet the perfect guy.
Yeah, we just found him on the street, but yeah. He knows exactly what to say.
Yes, okay. Here's Mark Burnett. He's going to be showing up at your tribe to talk to you for this reward. He's just pick his brain.
I know he's Australian. It sounds a little funny, but trust me, he's got a lot to say.
So Wanda Sykes is back, and we see her with a couple different people in this episode. We see her with Ian Bagg, and I thought she gave an unusual note to him. She said that, I want to see you do more crowd work. Now, I always feel like crowd work with a comedian is a sign of somebody. Sure, it's a sign of somebody that can control the room, but I feel like among comedians and in comic circles, I feel like crowd work is sort of looked down upon.
Yeah, I would say if we're looking at like the scale of comedy here, I feel like it goes like improv at the bottom, then crowd work, then stand up as a sort of a monologue. Where is
prop comics?
Prop comics, they're the pinnacle. They're the cream of the creme de la creme, right? I would say that it's interesting because I do agree with you, and I think it's one of those things where as an audience member you love it, but as a comic you might not like doing it just because if you're like, I prepared this material, I've workshopped all these words down to like the last letter, to just throw that all out the window and basically just start, you know, impromptu talking with the audience, which Ian didn't necessarily do, but I feel like that's the loose definition of crowd work. It's very impromptu and not necessarily something a comedian can prepare for.
I feel like he did do a good job with the note that was given to him of working with the crowd, because he came out and did sort of speak directly to the crowd and sort of got on them for not giving him a big enough ovation. And he's like, hey, you guys came here. It's not like you guys were having a barbecue and I broke in and kicked down the fence.
Yeah, it's interesting. So let's compare this with the note that Wanda gave Clayton English last week, which was like, don't be too angry. You got to make sure the audience likes you. And Ian has this rare quality where his quote unquote character or his bit was entirely antagonistic, but the crowd loved him for it.
Yeah. I think that's just who he is as a person.
I know I said this about Michael Palisak, but I'm going to take the off-putting label and now put it on Ian Bagg. And I don't know whether it's the way he was delivering his lines during his set, but it's just something's weird about him to me.
I don't know. I don't really get that. I thought he had some better jokes in the beginning of his set. I liked what he was saying about the crowd. And then I really liked his stuff where he was talking about Whole Foods. And then he was talking about how he want to pool all of our money together and get an apple. Talking about the $16.99 apples. Mike, do you ever go shopping at Whole Foods?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's if my wife likes to splurge sometimes. And so we go down to Columbus Circle and we shop at the Whole Foods. And yeah, the $16.99 for a pound of apples is probably a verified statement. Luckily, she has not been convinced to buy the asparagus water yet, but it's only a natural amount of time before that happens.
Yeah, that's coming. That's coming. Yeah. I do like to check out what's going on over there. And mm-hmm. So he's also talking about yoga pants and the Lululemon pants. And then he gets into some stuff that I didn't really love. It didn't really turn off any of the judges. He's talking about like punching different women in the breasts and then slapping a bunch of boobs as he's walking by like Huckleberry Finn on a picket fence.
Yeah, this is probably the part that I would assign the off label to, because I agree. I thought the beginning stuff, while antagonistic, was like funny. And I agree the Whole Food stuff, like it was nice that he was able to segue to observational stuff. But when he starts talking about like punching a woman in the boobs in a Jamba Juice because she was wearing yoga pants. Like, I just didn't get it.
I don't know why we're doing that or why we're even talking about this.
Yeah, I don't know. But again, like, he was somehow able to get the crowd into the palm of his hand. I'm glad he saved that for last, because if he opened with like, well, I punched a woman in the boobs in a Jamba Juice, like, I don't know how the crowd would have reacted to that. And I am surprised, you know, he's lucky that Norm likes him as much as he did, because Norm definitely, you know, Mr. Detail Oriented, would totally stop Ian and say, you know, it was Tom Sawyer with the picket fence and not Huckleberry Finn. You gotta do your research.
Always have to do your research. So yeah, nobody seemed to have an issue with the random talking about punching women in the breasts, and the crowd did seem to like him. Norm Macdonald said about him that he had an incredible control of the audience and the silliness of Ian is superb. Norm also really liked him in the first round.
Yeah, Norm is definitely his champion. I think Norm said in the first round he actually smoked cigars with Ian Bagg.
Yeah.
Which might be a little bit of favoritism on his part, but comedy is a weird connective world like that. Yeah, I mean, these judges absolutely loved Ian. It was no surprise that he got through. He was one of the people that I point to the earlier example of saying, like, well, he was definitely one of the strongest, but I don't know how he compares to the other five that made it through previously.
Roseanne said that he was like daring us to get pissed off at him, and it made us like him more.
She loves bucking the establishment, even if that's through, you know, bucking the judge's establishment. So I think she's all aboard the bag train.
And then Keenan said, this is who I was waiting to see. This is what this guy does.
Yeah, I mean, he. Do you think his? I mean, do you think it was a very different set from what he did last time?
You know, I don't remember exactly what he did last time. I do remember him. I feel like, but I remember his personality more. I thought he was fine. I didn't have an issue with him being one of the five people that got through.
No, I don't. I don't either. I I'll just say compared to the other five, I think he's a little weaker. But I do think his crowd work makes him stand out because, I mean, I kind of jinxed the diversity thing last week, Rob, because we saw four white guys make it through this week. So if he wants to stand out amongst the other like 20s and 20-year-olds and 30-year-old white guys, he definitely has a niche right now.
Although, in terms of the development deal, I cannot see the Ian Bagg TV show.
No, definitely not at all. Unless it's like about, unless it's like a new age All in the Family where he's just this curmudgeon.
I don't know. Not sure about that. So Ian Bagg gets through. We'll talk more about the five that got through at the end. Ryan Connor is second. He's the guy with a bunch of different brothers from all sorts of diverse backgrounds. He has 11 brothers all together. He talks about how that his Vietnamese brother came over, did not speak English, and they had to put labels on everything.
Yeah, this was, I mean, Roseanne called him postmodern. I'll ask the question again, Rob. Did you find anything postmodern about his set this time?
No, I thought it was sort of weird. I felt like they spent a lot of time talking about this. Like his first joke was very, very long, talking about the Vietnamese brother and the labels and the Southern grandma who was talking about like, why did you label the wall a wall?
Yeah, and I feel like on paper that's a joke that wouldn't work, but I personally feel like he acted out the grandma enough to make me actually like get the joke and enjoy it. I will say overall, I liked Ryan this time better than the first time.
Okay. He did a better joke, I thought, the stuff about Jesus being the carpenter and him being a carpenter and saying, yeah, but that's not what he's really known for.
Yeah, I like the line, the carpentry could not have been more incidental to the Bible.
So when Anthony goes to Roseanne, he says to her that, Roseanne, you were married to a comedian, allegedly?
Yeah, so that was definitely a Tom Arnold joke, but then Roseanne completely machetes the bit by saying, oh, I was married to two comedians.
Yeah, he's like, oh, Tom Arnold was a comedian? Like, Anthony was doing a good job of selling it. He's like, oh, who was the other one?
Yeah, he was still on the train of like, oh, I'm just going to keep pushing this punchline that Tom Arnold's not a comedian. But she just was not, she did not understand it whatsoever.
Yeah, it was funny. It was a funny joke from Anthony, and Roseanne sort of just stepped all over it. Roseanne felt that his material wasn't as good as last time, but he did good.
Yeah, so I have to disagree with her here, because from what I remember, his last set was basically about like, well, my family looks like the college brochure, and I thought that everyone used a lot of hand lotion, and I was wrong once I got to college. Like, I feel like these jokes, while the Vietnamese wall joke took a while to get to, I at least thought this stuff was, like, stronger than the first time he came out. So I have to disagree with Roseanne here.
Okay. We also had Keenan, who said that all these cultures give you perspective. You are a great comedian.
Yeah, Keenan, showing little shades of Roseanne here by talking about like your like every white person should have grown up like you to get a sense of what normalcy is and to get a good perspective on the world.
Shouldn't every person have lived in a background with people from every different cultures? Wouldn't that make the world a better place?
I'm preaching it.
Every person should be taken from their biological parents and live in an environment with another kid from every background imaginable.
Yeah, it's basically the child version of a key party.
Yeah. You have a kid, but then you just give it to a different, diverse background.
Yeah,
and then you get a kid that's from a different background as you.
Yeah, you basically put them all in the middle, and then someone just picks one that isn't theirs.
I think we just solved all the world's problems.
World peace will now be attained. Now, because we know the UN listens to this podcast.
I'm going to run for office on this platform.
Perfect. You have a lot of presidential candidates that won't be named probably have worse platforms than that at this moment.
Anyway, so Norm loved it. He said Roseanne was unfair.
Yeah, he does point out again, you know, nitpicky Norm here says, you know, I didn't understand the disciples joke why they had to be Southern. I guess that was, you know.
Oh, I thought he said he liked that. He thought that was funny.
Oh, I thought he said he loved the joke, but he just pointed out he doesn't know why they were Southern, which reminds me, there was like a Jim Gaffigan joke where he, on one of his CDs, where he does a joke about the apostles, and for some reason they sound like they're from Brooklyn, and he very quickly points it out. So, I mean, it was a small detail, and Norm still loved it, and he got pushed through anyway.
All right. So Ryan Connor gets through. Was that a surprise for you?
No, I would say not, especially with, even though he said beforehand, like, he thought Roseanne was not in his camp. I think he, again, he was one of the stronger people of the night. And I mean, if he gets a development deal, I'm sure they would love to make a show about him.
Yeah, I think he's probably got the best premise pilot of the group.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's Tony Baker in our first montage of the night, that Tony Baker talked about how that he uses a planner because that muggers will not take his planner.
Yeah, so Tony Baker, if people don't remember, he got the video package in the second episode about he's the divorced father who goes to Costco to get food, basically. I think I talked last week about the level 3 comic in terms of the way he was edited, was that they showed like one joke and the judges commenting on it. So it was like not exactly a montage, but not exactly a full set. That being said, I wasn't a big fan of this.
Yeah, it was funny. They said he had a great mind. And then Roseanne said the plans was your best bit. We have no idea because we didn't see anything else, but he does not get through.
No, which is, again, understandable. I mean, it's kind of weird seeing someone who got like a big video package get bumped down to this kind of level 3 and get eliminated. But if the planner bit was his strongest material and it wasn't very strong material to begin with, I think that's very indicative of his elimination.
Next up in the montage, we had Kayvon. And Kayvon said that it's tough being single, but he agrees that the men should pay for dinner. But he thinks that the women should hook up with the guy first, and then the men will decide where to go for dinner based on the level of performance by the woman in bed.
Yeah, so the next few people we're going to see are the double montage people. So we know that this is not a good sign for them. Kayvon was a very forgettable person from the very first episode. He did like the Owen Wilson impression.
Yeah.
Considering that was the thing, one thing I remember from his set is very indicative of how good his comedy was. And it was very much the same. I did like the line, you end up at a fast food restaurant, you know what you did wrong. But other than that, I thought it was fine, but it wasn't exactly a stellar joke from him.
Yeah. I mean, what I don't like about Kayvon is that I feel like his sensibility is that, you know, here I am, I'm such a good looking guy and I'm with so many women and this is what my jokes are about. And I don't know how relatable that is.
No, he's definitely no Lachlan Patterson.
I think that's a tough spot to be in as a comedian, to talk about how good looking you are and how many women you are with and all these dates that you're on.
Yeah, I mean, again, that would be a premise that NBC would eat up with a development deal, but it doesn't really help you resonate with the audience, especially if a lot of the audience are women, to have a guy come out and be like, so anyway, I date a lot of women and throw them away. Like, you're not exactly getting them on your side, Kayvon.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was more so than, hey, guys, so what do we say these ladies put out first before we take them out? Am I right?
Yeah, Kayvon has been watching like too many Andrew Dice Clay tapes and copying from them.
Next up was Melanie. I believe, Mike, if I'm correct, that her original set was about that she was the remote control when she was younger, and she was even a montage person the first time around.
Yep, she got double montaged here. We said her set was pretty unremarkable 2 weeks ago, and this one is about, you know, she lives in Texas, and the hardest part in living in Texas is that she can't figure out the lingo. And, you know, apparently people in Texas say T-Y for thank you, but she thought it meant that some guy named Ty was stalking her.
Hilarious.
I mean, I'm obviously not from Texas, so I had no idea T-Y was a phrase. Is that, do you happen to know any Texans that use T-Y a lot, Rob?
T-Y Hilton?
That might, maybe, are the Hiltons from Texas as well?
T-Y is, I think.
Thank you, Hilton?
Yes. Anyway, Amir Gollin gets through. He was a montage person as well in the first round. He was somebody that I didn't understand how he got through the first time. He doesn't get through this time. He talks about, do they have a forklift in China or do they call it a chopstick lift?
That's like a Seinfeld joke to T, right?
I don't know.
He's the one-liner guy, and he pulled out some more here. Some of the other ones are like, I went to a cannibal restaurant and had a salad, the soup of the day, and the employee of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And these are like, I liked his first set better. These are pretty unremarkable one-liners.
I thought the best of the three was the last one. He says that he went to a festival. They had food from colonial times. It was stale.
Yeah, it was a I was like chuckle worthy, but nothing that really should push him outside of a montage.
I just don't even know how Amir is in consideration for a development deal. I mean, he's just a guy who's just standing up there saying one-liners. That's not a character that you could build a TV show around.
The show would be like Laughing, where it just keeps cutting to different shots of him saying one-liners for 30 minutes.
I don't know what that show would be, but you can't build a TV show around Amir and the character that he's on stage.
No, definitely not.
Ricardo Flanagan is back.
Yeah, this is another montage guy from a couple weeks ago. He was pretty unremarkable his first time out, talking about like, well, stalking happens a lot in our country, and to me, stalking means you just can't accept rejection. And this time he's talking about his mom and her relationship with Jesus.
Yeah. I did kind of like what his mom said about how when Jesus comes back, all that laughing is going to stop.
Yeah, honestly, he might have been, outside of like the bookends of the montage, he actually might have been the strongest person within the meat of the montage.
Yeah, the meat of the montage.
Yeah, that montage meat.
The M-O-M.
Mom?
Yeah, how about some of that montage meat? I'm a montage meat collector.
That's Alex's next progression here.
Yes. So we also saw Shakir Stanley.
Yeah, and he was another guy kind of like Tony Baker. I think both of them were the last person to go in their respective episodes. Looks like he's going back to Wild and Out soon, Rob, because so he's talking about he doesn't understand how the word flamboyant is basically only associated with male homosexualities these days. And he looked up flamboyant in the dictionary. There's no mention of it. And he's pissed because he wants to hit on girls flamboyantly as well.
Yeah, and I have to say that I think I agreed with, was it Norm who said about this, that the material wasn't good, but you're naturally funny. And I have to say, I think I agree with this. I feel like he was a really funny guy, but I feel like that this material was kind of amateur hour.
I agree. And I mean, a good thing he should have sold this, because he is a professional performer on a TV show. So, you know, he better commit to it. And he did commit to the flamboyant character. But yeah, the material itself was not solid whatsoever. I thought he was definitely going somewhere when he started talking about, you know, looking up flamboyant in the dictionary. But when it just turned out to him being like, oh, I want to hit on girls while acting flamboyant as well, it just kind of fizzled out.
Yeah. So going back to Norm's critique of Shakir, he says the material wasn't good, but you're naturally funny, which ensures a lifetime in comedy, which is the best prize of all. What?
I love this Norm advice,
Hold on. Back this up, okay? So these comedians are competing for what I believe to be the best prize of all, a $250,000 deal and a development series at NBC. But it turns out that is just the second prize, because the best prize of all is just a career working in comedy, according to Norm Macdonald.
I'm surprised none of the other reality shows on TV have this as a prize, because this is clearly the best prize of all.
Yeah. They do try to, you know, put that out there on Survivor of like, oh my God, you had this life-changing experience, even though you didn't win.
Oh, I thought you were going to
say... up out there.
I thought you were going to say they put out on Survivor like, oh, don't worry, you're eliminated, but you're going to have a career in comedy after.
No, nobody has a career after Survivor.
Yeah, not even Bill Posley could get a career after Survivor.
No. And not even in comedy, in any field.
Yeah, exactly.
You're done.
Could be worse. Could be Big Brother, where you actually lose your career while you're on the show.
Your best case scenario on Survivor is to go back to the job you had before on Big Brother. That's off the table.
No, you're always going to lose your job.
Yeah, the live feed people call you up and fire you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the return of Andy Smith.
Robbed.
Yeah, right? I was very surprised that Andy did not get through tonight.
Yeah, I would say she might have been of the people that we saw, including the top 10. She may be like the top two or on the top two or three of performances there. Because I thought, just like last time we saw her, and Andy Smith got a package as well when she first appeared. She is the single mom who moved in back with her parents. But just like the first time, she's super polished. I love her delivery. I feel like all of her jokes worked. It's a mystery to me why she didn't make it through over some of these other people.
She really is the total package to me, because not only did she get the package the first time around, but also you saw her extensively with Wanda tonight. You saw her whole set. I thought she did very well. She was somebody that you can when we talk about this development deal, you could imagine the show that she is the star of or the lead of. Whether or not you would like that show is sort of irregardless, but you can definitely imagine the show. Here she is, single mom, moves back in with her parents, and that's a show that you could definitely envision. And I thought she was strong, and she doesn't get through.
Yeah. Though, to be fair, I do think if they made a development deal around this, I'm pretty sure Chuck Lorre would call and try to sue for stealing the premise of Mom.
Is that what Mom is? I feel like there's no kid involved in Mom.
I think there is. I think I'm pretty sure Anna Faris has a daughter. Unless they abbreviate Mom and it stands for Montage Meat instead.
Meat of Montage, I believe.
Yes, Meat of Montage.
All right, so we'll look into that. But that being said, we see Andy Smith. She found out that her boyfriend was collecting baseball cards. Her parents said, or her mom said, well, at least he doesn't do heroin.
Yeah, and I feel like something tells me if people ask my... my parents say like, oh, my son occasionally goes on to and starts talking about reality TV for hours at a time. I feel like my parents would have a similar reaction of like, well, at least if he was doing heroin, he might want to keep it a secret.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You think they would prefer that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about their preferences, but I mean, heroin at least produces a story. Talking for hours about, this week on Last Comic Standing might not be the biggest conversation starter at a party.
Yeah. By the way, confirmed on Wikipedia, Anna Faris's character is a single mom.
Oh, I missed all the times I saw the end of Mom before Big Brother this summer. I must have.
Yeah, they never see confused. Show the kid.
Yeah. Maybe they'll bring the one kid in.
Yeah, I guess I see a picture of him on the poster. It's a little boy, it looks like.
Oh, okay.
There you go. But that being said, also then she talks about she doesn't really understand marriage. She understands it from the old days where women were property. She doesn't understand why she has to pay money to break up with you.
Yeah, I was liking all this, specifically the stuff about, marriage makes sense when women were considered property and someone had to show ownership. Like, I feel like that's very reminiscent of her style, which is very like, it's centered around being a mom / being a single woman, but it's very like blunt and down to earth. And I thought she just, again, I can't gush about her enough. I just thought she had her persona down to a T.
She talks about the guy that she was with and how people would say, we had a baby. And it's like, no, shut up, liar. I had a baby.
Rob, did you ever, let the tongue slip and use this term at all in over the course of your two children now?
I'm sure at some point I must have said it, but I think this is what you're supposed to say.
Yeah. Did Nicole ever rail against you a la Andy Smith about it?
Not yet. Not yet. I'll try not to do yet. It on Snapchat later on tonight.
Perfect.
Just talk
try
about,
to emphasize it again and again until she catches on. And
yeah, I'll just be like, it's really been hard on us having a baby. We had a baby and it's been really tough. And
the physical tolls that we both had to take are just ridiculous.
It really wouldn't be any different than any other conversation I'm having with my wife where it's just like she's getting mad. So I don't know if anybody would notice.
Yeah. Well, it's an Easter egg then for all the Last Comic Standing listeners.
Yeah. So she ends up talking about how this guy was doing Adderall and then he was like a wasp and you just close the door and hope he dies in there. So Keenan and Roseanne both really liked her. Roseanne said, you're so audacious. You're a great comic. It was a great set. Keenan said, I love when women take ownership of their actions. But it was Norm who says, yeah, I was very disappointed. You were so good last week. 50-50, you move on.
And also, again, this is why Norm puzzles me as a judge. He goes, yeah, I'm very disappointed. I can't explain it. Like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do, Norm. You're supposed to tell her why you didn't enjoy the set.
I mean, the Norm stuff, the judgments are so random.
Oh, my God.
There's some people that go up there and it's like, okay, well, that wasn't good. And then he's like, oh, my God. He's blown away. And then other people, he's like, hated it.
Yeah. Now, we saw that with Clayton English, too, his first set, when he's like, which was a very strong set, and Norm just says, oh, I didn't like it. I feel like he's shaking a magic eight ball under the table of trite phrases and just sort of saying, all right, I guess I'm supposed to say I didn't like it here. Here, I'll pull out the analogy of what the biggest prize in life is. I don't know where he's coming from.
Yeah. I mean, he said that was the best set of the night. I didn't like it.
Yeah. Like,
what?
I don't understand. Also, I mean, you have to hand it to Andy Smith, who also was able to make endometriosis funny. I feel like that alone should put her in the top 10.
Yeah. Yeah. So she did not get through. and there is no, what was the thing last year of last comic comeback?
Oh yeah. Comic comeback, I think is what it was called.
Sadly, there's no more of that this year.
No, though. Oh, good. Cause that won't cause us to have any more mental breakdowns over the timing of when things were filmed. If this was going on live at the time.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Dominique. And Dominique is somebody who we saw in the first round. She talked about how her biological dad called her up and wanted a kidney. Mm-hmm. She was with Wanda. She was talking about how she was with some guy and his tooth fell out, and Wanda shut that down, said, stop talking about this. Nobody cares about this story. And so then we got to see Dominique perform.
Yeah, so at least her story was happier this time than it was last time.
Happier story.
I think I remember us saying last time that, like, this was just a really sad story and it was tough to laugh at it. At least, you know, when she's talking about her barbecue with Ethan and Seth and Molly and Jeremy, that's at least a little funnier. That being said, I feel like this bit would have killed at the Food and Wine Festival, but maybe not on Last Comic Standing.
Mike, I have to be honest. I don't get Dominique at all. And I don't know why the judges think that she's doing so well. She doesn't even seem like she is a comedian with jokes.
No.
She seems like she's just like a random lady that they pulled off the street. And she's just up there like talking about her day.
So she's the Mike Fleiss of Last Comic Standing then?
She just is like a... She's a funny person, and I really like her as a character, but I just felt like this was some of the weakest material of the night. Like, there were barely jokes here.
Oh, absolutely. Of the five that made it through, she is by far the weakest, and I would definitely argue the weakest out of the top 10 in general. I agree with you. It's even just looking at the jokes that I wrote down on paper, like, they're not very funny, and even her delivery was not that great. I mean, look at someone, speaking of food-related humor, let's look at Nikki Carr last year. Nikki Carr might not have had the best material, but she delivered it with a certain energy that really made it work. Here, she's very lackadaisical and matter-of-fact, and that sort of stuff works when there's good writing, but when it doesn't, as it does here, it just doesn't produce anything worthwhile.
Yeah, she's talking about going to these barbecues with her white friends, and they eat Brussels sprouts, and she says that, no, we eat full-size cabbage. And then they put peas in the potato salad, and that really could ruin the whole barbecue if you put peas in the potato salad. And then the way they season things, they use the seasoning like this, but I use the seasoning like this. I did like the stuff about Lipitor. I thought that was funny. About, like, we eat low cholesterol. She said, for what I'm paying for Lipitor, we better put a lot of seasoning on there.
Yeah, do you think Lipitor got some nice promotion here?
Yeah. And she talked about how that she's the one person there with all of her white friends, and they're all getting high, and that they're going to murder her. And she sees that on crime shows. I don't know. I just did not get it.
It's interesting. Also, the hallucinating joke, I feel like that's more of a side effect of, like, flaca than it is pot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe all her friends are going into the floctagon. Who knows?
I don't know. Keenan said she took him to church.
Where's
Hosier?
Yes. Hosier's going to sue now. If she
took him to church, she's got that Lipitor in a bag,
and the peas are in potato salad.
She seasons the potato salad like this.
Oh man, that's, you know, Hosier's gonna be performing that in a grocery store in like 3 years when he becomes irrelevant again.
Take him to produce, that aisle's got all of the best sales.
Sir,
Brussels sprouts.
Sir, we told you for the last time, you have to stop singing in this store. The customers are complaining. Go back to Canada. If this is a church that we're in, I am not going to come back next Sunday to Dominique's church, just because, like, if this is what had the way Reverend delivers things. Again, I obviously have not been to many church sermons, but that's I would not want to listen to a reverend deliver the things the way Dominique delivered them.
When he says take him to church, is he saying that she should go be a church comedian?
No, I feel like that's Norm's thing.
When he says take him to church, is he saying that she should go warm up for Taylor Tomlinson as the church comedian?
Yeah, it's a subtle nudge, right? To say this is your new career path, you're going to be a church comic.
Well, here's what I don't get about Norm. He says, you know, and these comics are up there, I have this pen and I write down all the things that I didn't like. and I didn't touch the pen once. Like, what? This was not even just good, but this was a flawless set from Dominique?
I don't know if Norm was trying to be like that hardened, you know, the hardened old man in every inspirational film that's like, you have touched me and I will no longer be as mean as I was. But like, I think he was trying to create a bigger moment than it actually was. Also, why does Norm only write down the things that he didn't like? I feel like that's not a good way of judging things.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like this. I didn't like this. Everything else was good.
He leaves it to his memory to remember the stuff he did like.
Oh, God. Well, that is that's a tricky territory.
And then Roseanne was like, I love so much that you're into murder TV.
Yeah, Roseanne starts to, I'm sure she was cut for time, but I'm sure she wanted to start gabbing with her about true crime shows.
Yeah, I did not get this, Dominique. I have to be honest. And I really was blown away that she got through.
Yeah, I was completely surprised too.
I didn't think that she should have been in this round.
Yeah, we were not very impressed with her last time, but and a lot of other comics were, you know, passed over in montages or unfortunately fell by the way of the criticism montage that I would have loved to see in the top 10 above Dominique. But again, the head-to-head rounds might kill her off nice and quick next week.
Okay, like a true crime show.
Like she'll be, her head will be behind the grocery store where Hozier is performing.
Joe List is next. Joe List will also get through.
So Joe List is the guy that, and we'll talk about his set, but I personally feel like if there are like two or three people that NBC can make a development deal out of right now, I feel like Joe List is one of those people. Just because I feel like they could take, hey, overly anxious guy, let's just put him in any situation and see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. I could see it. Joe List will not be reading books about meditation. Joe List, you should totally not come to yoga.
No, he is the, his POV is basically anti-Vetus at this point.
Yes. He talks about how meditation, he doesn't even know why it works. So you want me to sit alone in a room with nothing but my thoughts, and that's supposed to help me with my anxiety?
Yeah, what's the cure for my ADD? Sudoku? I really like that bit.
Yeah, it was funny. And he talks about how he needed to stop drinking. He says, when some people drink, they unwind. I become unraveled. That was a very strong joke.
That's interesting. Have you ever encountered anyone who, when they drink, they become more anxious instead of more relaxed? Because I haven't.
Well, I feel like he becomes unraveled in terms of like he just loses his mind.
Oh, I guess so, considering he apparently goes on benders where he steals street signs and wakes up covered in bruises.
Yes, because he woke up covered in signs and they said, you think that's a sign? Like, it's literally a sign to stop.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Might be a little Amelia Bedelia joke territory, but I thought he made it work.
No, I thought he was good. And then the final thing he said was about how in his family, they used to call getting drunk, getting happy.
So that's what Pharrell's music really means. Oh,
that's what it's all about?
Yeah, someone tell the Minions.
Really gives a new meaning to the works of Bobby McFerrin as well.
Yes, when he was whistling, that's actually the sound of him hitting the ground.
Wow. Now we know why we're not worried. All right, so Keenan said that he was vulnerable, but not pathetic.
Yeah, this is when the judges were getting really philosophical about Joe here, and this is a reason why I think he might be on a good side of the development deal, because they're describing him as like he's the perfect type of comedian because he's vulnerable, but he's not a pathetic type of person, which I do agree he walks that line between like self-deprecating but not overly hating on himself. But man, the judges were heaping so much praise on him.
Yeah, they really did like it. Norm said that how he conceals some things and he reveals other things. Norm loved him.
Yeah, well, Norm also, again, gets on his little soapbox here, which I feel like is like permanently installed to his judge's booth, where he says, you know, I like the beginning of your set because, you know, I feel like there are some comedians who come out here and try to show how smart they are, and you really show how funny you are instead.
Yeah. Okay.
Which I don't know if that's a shot of like Janine Garofalo or...
Oh, I'm sure it's...
Or Dennis Miller.
Yeah, I think that Norm doesn't like that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely not him.
He's not into that sort of stuff. All right. Well, before we get to our next montage, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at True Car. Now, Mike, there's so many things that you could be doing online and with your time instead of going out to go haggle with these dealerships. Like, you could be making the perfect potato salad that doesn't include any peas.
Yeah, or I could be chatting with people in an online forum about trading kids so we get people of every ethnicity.
Right. Or you could also be looking for prices to get the cheapest Lipitor around, because we're going to season that potato salad.
As much as we want to.
So we could be doing all of those fun things instead of going out and trying to compare prices with a car. And that's the beauty of TrueCar.com and the TrueCar mobile app, because you can see the exact car you want with all of those features that you need and see exactly what other people are paying down to the zip code. There's complete transparency. What you see as the price is what you'll ultimately pay, and you'll be connected with a trusted, certified TrueCar dealer that you won't have to haggle with, and you won't be getting ripped off like when you go and buy a bunch of apples at certain organic grocery stores, which we will remain nameless.
Yes, and with certain types of yoga pants distributors that will also remain nameless.
Yes. So you could save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP with no hassles or headaches. It's how car buying was meant to be, with over 2 million cars sold in the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So there's over 10,000 dealers in the network, and you can work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer contact. So visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to start saving. TrueCar, never overpay. It's more than we could say for those apples, though, right?
Yeah. Well, they're enjoyable with the added benefit of the yoga pants. It's worth the $17.
They're organic. Yeah. Let's talk about our next montage here, Mike.
Yes, the criticism montage makes a return for the second week in a row.
Mm-hmm. Ambrose Jones starts off, and we didn't quite know it was the criticism montage when Ambrose started.
No, it definitely. They definitely sort of pulled one on us over there when he starts going on, and his set seemed fine. Ambrose Jones, for those of you that might not remember, he was a very simple guy. I mean, the biggest joke that he made was like, I'm Ambrose Jones the second. People asked me if I wanted to call my son Ambrose Jones the third, but I wanted to end the legacy of all this bad activity. And he has a sort of a similar mentality when he said he's supposed to be the protector of his mother and sisters, but he's been outside playing double dutch the entire time. And he makes this whole joke about his son wanting a mohawk, but he wants his son to pay for it, which this might be a little trepidatious to say. I feel like that joke was a little Cosby-esque. I feel like I've heard
easy,
that joke before.
Easy with that.
I know. That's easy territory. I've heard that before in an old Cosby set. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. You're saying that he's the fat Jewish of Last Comic Standing?
Yes, the skinny Ambrose.
Skinny Ambrose, yes. Of course, referring to the Instagram celebrity.
Oh, I thought you were referring to Bruce Valanche.
So then we heard from Keenan, your biggest competition is yourself. I feel like that's Keenan's go-to sort of criticism when he doesn't have anything else. Yeah, you know, your biggest competition is yourself. That's sort of like the you suck in Keenan.
Now, he said that last week, too. I feel like that's like Keenan's like self-help motivator go-to line of like, well, your biggest comp, the only person that can defeat you is yourself. You're your own worst enemy.
Yeah. I look at myself in the mirror every day and say that. You're your own worst enemy. Your biggest competition is yourself.
Good. Good. Has that been helping you
no,
at all?
No.
Maybe you need Keenan to say it to you. Maybe that's the solution.
All right. So then, Mike, you're so much better than me at this on these montage people that they whip by so fast in the criticism. Who did we see and what were the criticisms?
All right. So I may screw up a couple people here and there.
How could you not?
We're lucky that since, 20 people went last week, we basically had everyone else to choose from. So it made my sleuthing a little bit better.
Yeah, it was like Tyler Durden went in and put in like a flash frame of like four different comedians and we have to figure out who they were.
That is the cleanest film cell that Tyler Durden has put into anything, if that's the case.
Yes.
So these are also usually in the first montage, and or last week when we did this, we at least saw the comedians like we saw them refer to the judges refer to specific things. These were much more general statements, but I'll see if I can go through them. Norm told, I think this was Drew Thomas, that he didn't find his material original. Keenan said Moses Storm was all over the place. Norm said he was watching Esther Pavitsky's set and he just got bored the entire way through, which is pretty insulting.
Roseanne, I thought he said that she looked bored the whole way through.
Oh, I thought he said might be a miscommunication there.
Yeah, I believe he said that she looked bored, not so much that he was bored.
Well, I mean, speaking towards Esther, and I don't want to go too much down the Esther tunnel right now, but
whoa.
I think that Esther has like a very like monotone, kind of dry type of delivery, at least from what I remember her appearing the last time. So I don't understand what the change is in that, but it's Norm. It's a wild card. Roseanne told KT Tatara that it took him a while to get going and that pissed her off. And then Norm tells, I think this was Greg Warren, that he came to a realization that he was watching his set, that very good comics are going to lose this competition.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a
bummer.
Produces an understandably quizzical response from Greg, and then Anthony has a nice fire back where he says, sounds like something you should have just thought.
Mm. All right. And then we come out of the criticism montage with Noah. And Noah talks about how that he got like cornrows in his hair and then he was going to buy a do-rag. And then the checkout person was thinking, like, what are you doing? And then he knew what the checkout person was thinking because he was at self-checkout. And shades of Rodman with the self-checkout jokes.
Definitely shades of Rodman. And I'm sure Rodman would have also made a reference to Queen Latifah from Set It Off. It seemed like they have a similar taste in movies.
Yeah. Roseanne says he needs to be more animated.
Yeah, which is the same critique she had last time. I feel like that was the nail in his coffin there. If he couldn't take their notes and improve on it, it just shows that he's not going to pursue this competition any further.
Okay. Two more comedians to go. Michael Palasek.
He was a parking tickets in Chicago guy from last time.
Okay. Here's Michael Palasek. I feel like he looks like he's like the very, very, very poor man's John Hamm.
Yeah, this is like the like penny version of John Hamm.
He's the 99 cent store version of John Hamm.
What is a period?
So he's an English major and then he got a job at a pyramid scheme company.
Is this was Mike Scoopin also an English major in college? Did we now find this out about him?
He's another Michael.
Yeah, maybe that's, oh, am I next, Rob?
Yes.
Is this the telltale name?
Yes. And so then, what was the pyramid scheme company? And they told him that he was going to have his own company?
Yeah, so I guess the pyramid scheme was trying to appeal to him by saying, like, hey, in 12 months, you could be owning and running your own company. And then he jokes, and he says, like, does that scare you? And then Michael says, well, no, it should actually scare you.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's a pretty intense pyramid scheme.
Yeah. Then he talks about capitalism, and they showed this on going into the commercial. You capitalism, I thought it's where you see a period and the next letter should be bigger.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty funny. Definitely haven't heard that one before, but I don't know how many more English major jokes he has up his sleeve. Hopefully it's not like Sammy Obade with all those math jokes.
And then I thought he had a good joke about the SUV, but what about the glaciers? What about the rainforest? He's like, this has four-wheel drive. We could go anywhere.
Yeah, this is interesting. I feel like Michael Palasek was almost one-liner-esque. I mean, we'll talk more. There were a couple more jokes he did in his set, but he got like five jokes in. Compare that to someone else who got like two or three in the same amount of time.
Yeah. Then also, he talked about how his parents have a great washing machine. You put the clothes in, it ends up folded on your bed.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who only moved out of home a couple of years ago, I definitely like that joke.
And then he also closed with this joke about how, you know, he thinks that growing up Catholic is good because you don't have sex until you're married. But what if you don't get married? That sucks. And then you die. When you go to heaven, you're a virgin. And then you might have to have sex with a terrorist.
As bad as it is to say, I like that joke just because of the way it led to. It was one of those things where, like, once you it happens and then you think about where it, you know, what the breadcrumbs were leading up to it, it makes sense. I thought it was a strong joke to close on.
Yeah. Yeah, Keenan said that he loved the terrorist joke. It seemed like it did not go over well with the audience.
I mean, I could imagine. So again, I won't talk so much about, you know, the post 9/11 comedic audience, but I feel like even still to this day, making jokes about that type of stuff, even, you know, 14 years after the fact and however many years after the war in Iraq was, it's still a little bit of a touchy subject with the audience.
Yeah. And so then Norm Macdonald, he loved the English teacher joke, and Roseanne says she wishes that he would, you know, get to it faster.
Yeah, should tighten it up. It just needs to get there faster.
Okay. All right. So Michael Palasek gets through. Are you surprised Michael Palasek got through?
No, he's another person in this category of, like, I would say he was one of the strongest of the night. I actually liked this set better than his first set. I thought this set had more substance to it. But again, comparatively in the top 10, if you rank them, I feel like he would finish somewhere in the bottom.
Yeah, I don't disagree. That I'm just surprised that he got through.
His development deal would be about him moving back in with his parents.
Whoa.
What if they just said, like, they say, okay, you're competing for a development deal where your character moves back in with your parents.
That's what all the shows are. I think the development deal would be much better about him at the Pyramid Scheme Company. I think that would be much more exciting.
That would be very fun. I guess cameo, would Mike Scoopin play his boss?
I think that that would be very funny.
They're all played, all the characters, are the all the actors are Michael. So Michael Richards could be in there.
Oh boy. This is one hell of a show.
This could be a great show.
Yeah. All right. Last person of the night. The always controversial Amy Miller.
And I believe she's the only person we've seen thus far on the show who was the last comic to go and did not make it through.
Yeah, and I was surprised here because I did think that she had a strong night tonight. Now, the last time that we talked about her, she was in the second hour of the premiere, and I thought that I was in agreement with Norm Macdonald about some of the jokes that she had said during the first time around, but I thought that she was much more consistent this time out.
Absolutely. She's one of these people that took the judges' notes and ran with it. I mean, throughout, you know, even outside of Norm's comment that he was really offended by the last joke that she told last time, all the judges were telling her, you know, your set is just very disjointed. And so she took that note and this set was basically seamless. And I agree. I think she definitely improved upon her first set, which I think should be something you hold into consideration when you pick people for the top 10.
Yeah, I thought she was really good this time around. And she talked about how she comes from a huge family and there's also a lot of people in it. And the other people in her family ask her if she's lost weight. She's like, no, you guys just got bigger. She talked about how she weighs a lot. Nobody could guess what she weighs, and it's because her vagina is solid gold.
Yeah, that was that did not go to a place that I thought it would at first.
I mean, it was very much a left turn.
Yeah. Which genital related humor do you like more, this or Tell It to My Balls?
Well, Tell It to My Balls was so classic.
It's a legend. It's in the pantheon of comedy.
Yes. It's right there with Who's On First, I think.
Yeah, Who's On First, seven words you can't say on television, Tell It to My Balls.
Yeah. And then she closed with a joke about how it was such a problem for the last guy that she was with that he just couldn't stop thinking about all the guys that she had been with. And she said, you know, that's what a coincidence.
Yeah, so I think it's weird to say, but I feel like this time out, she was able to own her material a lot more, mainly because I think her set was more about her. Last time, I feel like her set was sometimes about like where she was raised and her dad, and then sometimes it was about living in California. But she made this all about her. I also love the line about she says that chubby ladies can get laid just as much as you know, women of a smaller size, but half those times are secrets. Yeah. I thought that was a really funny line.
Yeah, I thought this was a lot more fun than the first time around when she was talking about jokes about how she was talking about her family and about her dad and about how, you know, young black men are being shot. It's like it was all like going to like a very dark place the last time around. And I felt like there was a lightness about her this time around that there wasn't the first one. But Norm said that comedy is writing. Throw the hurtful line away. Norm seems like he still didn't love her, while Roseanne said that the gold vagina line was so funny. Keenan said that should have been her opening joke.
I don't know about that, because I feel like it led all that stuff about, you know, her weight led into the joke. It'd be weird if she just walked out and says, well, I weigh so much because I have a solid gold vagina. Like, how do you segue from that?
Well, I don't even, it's a slow joke to start on. So I would disagree with Keenan on that because, you know, I think you need to get that first laugh to happen quick. And it's sort of like, you'll never guess how much I weigh. If we went to one of those things, you never would guess how much I weigh because I think it was too long to get to that.
Did you like Anthony telling Keenan to whip out his platinum?
His platinum. Wow.
Shades of Brian Corridon.
Yes. That's what I was thinking.
That's what we all think about Survivor Guatemala when somebody mentions platinum, right?
Right. So Amy Miller does not get through either.
Yeah, definitely Andy Smith and Amy Miller, I would argue, might be two of the biggest snubs of the semifinals, both rounds combined.
Well, then when we factor in this top five, baby, we have Ian Bagg, Joe List, Dominique, Michael Palsak, Ryan Connor. Only three women are in the top 10.
I told you. it's without hesitation. They usually only put like two to three women in the top 10.
There's just no way. And even if you're going to say, okay, we only are going to take one woman tonight, there's no way that it should have been Dominique over either Andy or Amy.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe they were looking at it from some sort of development deal angle. We made that argument a couple times last season.
What is the Dominique show?
It's going to be.
She can't have a show.
She's going to be a TV chef, and all the wacky hijinks that ensue when she has to bring on her white friends to help her with the show.
I mean, that might be a good show. It might be funny, but I mean, she was just that not that exciting of a personality.
No, I completely agree. Again, bottom of the list for me, number 10, I only hope that next week someone just knocks her out really easy and gets an easy spot in the top five.
Yeah. So to me, I don't get it. I think that, you know, you could definitely see Amy or Andy. And what, we can't take two women? I mean, were these four other guys that great? We can't lose any of them?
Yeah, again.
Michael Palisak or Ryan Connor, we have to have those guys in there?
Exactly. Like, I don't think these four guys really represent four such unique perspectives that any of them can make a development deal. You know, again, I don't want to boil it down to perspectives here or demographics, but I feel like they're all kind of in the same mishmash here. Whereas I feel like if you replace one of them with Amy or Andy, they have such, even between the two of them, they have such wildly different perspectives that I feel like it'd be worth it to bring at least one of them on.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's our top 10. Now, they told us that next week, the competitors are going to start going head-to-head.
Yes. So this is probably going to be very reminiscent of the battle rounds from The Voice.
To face off for a shot in the finals. So are we going to see basically like two comedians go head-to-head and the winner just moves on? Like, is it potentially 5 weeks of this?
I doubt it's going to be 5 weeks. I'm wondering if they're going to cram... Actually, I mean, 10 sets aren't too much if you factor them in at like 3 to 4 minutes a piece. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that they could do all five matchups next week and then just do a top five, maybe like a 2-hour finale the week after that. I don't think they're gonna expound on the head-to-head rounds at all.
Yeah, we have no idea what's gonna happen.
We have, but that's the fun of it.
Is it
walking through a haunted house?
I guess so. Yeah, we just really have no idea what's going to happen next. Yeah, I think that it's probably what we are going to see next week. I think we probably will see all five of these battles, you know, 4 or 5 minutes each, and then just have the 10 comedians and get down to one final show where five people are going to perform.
Which means they probably won't have time to show, I don't know, the top four times that Roseanne farted on Last Comic Standing.
Oh, no.
Have to save that one for season 10.
Save it for season 10. But overall, exciting to see where it's going to go.
Exactly. I'm a little disheartened to see that it might end in 2 weeks because I actually have been really enjoying this season. And as much as we kind of bagged or Ian bagged, if you will, on these contestants tonight, I feel like this is a very strong top 10 and it's been a very fun season overall.
Yeah, I think it's a good top 10. I was more excited about the top five from last week. But that being said, eager to see what they're going to do because it's all an adventure for us.
Do you have a winner pick?
I don't know, Mike. I would say I'll go with Andy Erickson just because she's so different than the rest of the field.
Give me Ryan Connor.
Ryan Connor.
If he got coined the term postmodern, they love his sets and his development deal would be he's basically a sitcom waiting to happen. So yeah. I think he's the perfect package at the moment.
And I think my second pick might be Taylor Tomlinson.
I would love to see Taylor Tomlinson just because she actually might be my favorite just because I love her material. It's a little dark and the way she delivers it is a lot of fun. So give me Church Comic for number two.
Yeah, because she's young and she has a really high upside, I think, while she may not have a ton of experience, but I could see her on television.
Yeah, I absolutely could too.
Okay, Mike, that's going to do it for this week. What's the hashtag?
You want to do montage meet?
Sure. Was it montage meat or meat of the montage?
We could do either or.
Or montage meat collector.
I don't know if montage, is that too many characters?
MMC, how about that?
MMC, sounds like MXC.
No, MMC.
And it's in honor of the fact that we probably will not see any more montages for the rest of the season.
That's right, unless there's some sort of countdowns. Are countdowns montages?
I don't know if that counts.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you do a countdown of the montages.
All right, so Mike... Great stuff today. Follow Mike Bloom on Twitter. He's at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. Of course, I'm at Rob Sestrino. Mike, what else are you doing these days that you want to promote?
Lots of stuff behind the scenes. If you are a Survivor fan, I do a podcast called The Survivor Historian, something for you to enjoy in the off season. We just finished podcasting about Survivor Exile Island, which, comparing this to Last Comic Standing, is probably, in my opinion, the funniest Survivor season there is. Lots of comedy there. So check that out, funny115.com/podcast. And I know you have a lot of Survivor content to talk about as well. It's a very fun time to be a Survivor fan.
Lots of good stuff coming up. All right, Mike, thank you so much. We'll be back to talk about Last Comic Standing again next week. Looking forward to seeing your comments on robinswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.